Morning, everyone. This is Dr. Campbell, Board Chair. I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order, the Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners, on October 21st, 2020, at 8:30 a.m. We'll just do a roll call as Heather has made sure everybody who is participating has stated that they are here in attendance, but I will call for my board members. Dr. Ulano?
Here.
Dr. Foreman?
Here.
Mr. Rhodes?
Here.
Dr. Campbell? Here. As noted, our Executive Director, Heather Bottas, is present, as well as our AAG, Seamus Monahan Esquire. Our investigators are present telephonically, as well as doctors and counsel. We have not heard anyone chime in that is a complainant, so we will go ahead and proceed with the meeting. Does anyone have any conflicts of interest that they would like to declare at this time? Seeing none, we'll move forward. And while you're not speaking, if you would please mute your phones, because we get a lot of static and background noise. Thank you very, very much. So we will move on to number five, which is our items for board review, discussion of possible action. A is our investigation files. So we will begin with number one, which is complaint 20-11-C, which is Mark Anthony Rosales, DPM, who is present on the phone. Have Dr. Saunders, who is the investigator, and counsel is also present in Moscow. So we will ask Dr. Saunders to proceed with his investigation report.
Sure. I have two of them. The first one here is going to be 11-C. This is a case where the complainant was concerned about the generation of a bill that was performed here, and that was the sole reason for filing the complaint. As a summary, basically the patient felt that he was being billed twice for the procedure that occurred in February. Just a quick review of the actual care that was done. A patient was seen several times for some, I guess, conservative measures before a surgical intervention was placed. And going through the initial treatments, the patient was initially seen the first time, given a diagnosis of some plantar fasciitis, was given an injection, some orthotics, was given a nerve block as well. And I'll go through some of the billing of this at the end of it. Second appointment, kind of was reevaluated, was giving us strapping at that point, followed up another visit, giving an ultrasound-guided corticosteroid injection. He was seen a couple more times every 2 to 3 weeks there following. At some point there, it was there was a change of billing that occurred as the office of visit seemed to get a little bit more intense, as far as comprehensive, rather. I went from a 99213 to a 99214. Then a surgical procedure was decided, and the procedures were performed on February 14th, a few months after that initial visit, and some conservative therapies were done. And the patient seemed to undergo a 10X procedure for a plantar fasciotomy, which seemed to be performed in post-operative care, seemed to be going along just fine without any real issues. It comes down to just the patient was concerned about the billing. So going through some of the billing aspects of this, I looked at it. The initial visit billed typically as a 99203. There are some documentation issues noted throughout the chart. Patient was billed for a 20605, typically a small joint injection. The notes kind of make it clear that it was a plantar fasciotomy injection. Corticosteroid was injected, not sure how much or which type was utilized. And patient was also billed to the insurance company as a nerve block, 66450. Now, there was obviously, it looks like there's an error in the billing code for the 20605. I guess it should have been a 20550. Maybe an oversight. Patient was also billed for the nerve block, and there's no real documentation to show that patient needed a nerve block as a separate procedure. I think the judging from the minimal notes related to that, it was just a nerve block to help with the plantar fascia injection. No real RSD or any neurological problems documented to associate for a separate procedure that was done. On another visit there, it was billed as an ultrasound guidance. I'm going to assume it was done. I don't have pictures to document that there was an ultrasound guided injection, but we'll assume that that was done, right? Again, a nerve block was billed again on the second visit, another injection of the corticosteroid. This time it was billed as 20551. Again, I think that's a tendon issue, more of a peroneal or an Achilles code as opposed to the fascial injection. Again, no documentation based on the nerve block. And there were no real medications utilized, so I'm not sure exactly what was injected. As we go down through the separate visits, follow-up, two or three visits later, all of a sudden we changed to a 99214 billing. There does appear to be some more documentation included. I'm not sure if the comprehensive change, but there is some increased documentation noted with a physical examination, generalized body, cardiovascular, lungs. They seem to be documented at this point as they weren't previously. That occurs on 1-7-2020 and then again on 1-30, two bills in a row. Patient was given a CAMBOOT, however, that was not documented as billed. So I'm not quite sure what happened there. Going to the surgical procedure, patient was billed for two codes for a plantar fasciotomy using a Tenex procedure, 28080 and a 26008. There was also a ultrasound-guided code as commonly used with the Tenex procedure. And then the patient was also billed to the insurance company at 20550, which I guess would be the appropriate documentation for a plantar fascia injection. However, in the op note, there is no mention of an injection separately performed or indication for one. So going through some of the chart there, there definitely looks to be some documentation issues as to what's being injected, why it's being injected, and how it's being given. And then there are some, I guess, discrepancies with some of the billing that I noticed. In doctor's response, he mentions that he billed the appropriate codes based on what the Tenex representative was giving him, which I feel is more the physician's decision to choose which procedures he's billing. Doctor's written response makes it relates that he has made some changes. He believes that the initial billing errors was an oversight and a computer issue, which he's made some changes, hiring additional staff members. He's using different EBNs to help with the documentation purposes, but I'm not sure if that's addressing the issues that I am finding here. And that's kind of what my biggest concerns were for that case.
Thank you very much, Dr. Saunders. I agree with your evaluation very clear. Those are the same kind of concerns I have, and I don't, at this point, I didn't have any other questions for you other than to note on those days where there were the 99214 billed on the 7th and again on the 30th, and where it was documented that written informed consent was performed at each of those visits, while there was actually only documentation of a informed consent form in the chart for the 7th. And the other questions I have all can obviously direct at Dr. Rosales. So I'd like to know if Dr. Yolano, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No questions at this time.
Okay, Dr. Foreman.
No, I have no questions for Dr. Saunders.
Thank you. Mr. Rhodes, any questions? All righty. So we have no complainant on the line in this case. So Dr. Rosales, would you like to Dr. Rosales, would...
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, so hang on a sec. We're having some background here noise. Okay, so if you would like to speak or your attorney, please give us a summary, and then each the board members will ask you questions. So,
This is Ken Moskow. I'll Dr. Rosales can certainly speak on his own behalf, but for the board's understanding, and Dr. Rosales can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Dr. Rosales just got on the line, so he was probably not privy to anything that was said up to this point. And I apologize. I don't think he had the correct dial-in information. But as for one of the points that was made was I think that Dr. Rosales had not responded to certain billing issues in terms of the codes and things of that nature that the board just discussed. Obviously, as everyone knows, the complaint was simply for a second bill that was not appropriate. And as you know from Dr. Rosales' response, that was an admitted mistake that Dr. Rosales' office corrected immediately upon hearing about it by refunding the complainant the full amount of that bill. And of course, that the billing issues with regard to this particular case occurred in the context of a time period where Dr. Rosales' office was revamping his billing practices. So, to prevent this type of thing from happening. So, to the extent that, to respond directly to the complaint at issue, Dr. Rosales did address the complainant's issues with a full refund and obviously admitted that was a mistake. In terms of the billing codes, I'll defer to Dr. Rosales to address his care and treatment of the patient and the billing he did for that. But again, given that Dr. Rosales wasn't on the call until right after you all concluded, I assume you'll sort of recap what the issues were in your questions for him so he's got the full context.
Okay, well, he did get the report to read, so he should have some background in knowing where the concerns
sure.
that were presented by Dr. Saunders. So, but I'll begin then, because I can kind of give that synopsis. Again, there wasn't any obvious, there wasn't any patient standard of care issue with this complaint, and obviously the concern about the billing and that was taken care of, and that Dr. Rosales has certainly made an effort to improve his office protocol as far as billing that concerning with billing insurance and having a patient be double billed. Anyway, the concerns that were presented were the documentation issues. One of the documentation issues that I know Dr. Saunders mentioned and was also apparent to me was on some of the assessments that Dr. Rosales had, he indicated the patient had a calcaneal pronation and used a diagnosis of Aquinas, but there was nothing in the musculoskeletal examination part of the PE that indicated that there was no documentation to support those diagnoses. The concern over the use of the two different codes for injections, you do one or the other, and typically for that 927 visit, it should have been the 64450 and not the 20605 code. Going on then with other billings, it was the same issue, billing both of those codes together. When we noticed, though, too, that it looks like there was a change in the electronic medical records, and we have the visits of 17 and 130, Dr. Rosales, where you're billing a 99214 for each and indicating in your notes at those visits that a written informed consent was performed. It's like you billed for two pre-op visits, one on the 7th and one on the 30th. On the 30th, you also indicate that there was a written consent, but there is nothing in the chart, only for that date of 1-7. Again, another question. Can you, why don't we, you can go ahead. If you would answer that question first.
I typically spend, you know, quite a bit of time with the patient when they come in for a preoperative assessment. And yes, I did one on the 7th. We go through everything again, you know, just like we do the second time. The hospital requires that we see them within 30 days to update their history and physical. So I go through everything that we say if I haven't seen them in a month or two, or it's going to be a time restraint where they want a complete history and physical. Then I go through the entire chart with them again. I go through the history and physical. We go through the procedure. We go through the x-rays. We go through the consent form. If it's signed already, then we just go through it again, make sure they don't have any questions. We review the pictures that are there, any risk or complications. We review the post-operative course for whatever procedure that they might be having so that there's no confusion. So I tried to be real thorough. If it's a requirement, I mean, it's a requirement by the hospital, otherwise we're not able to do the procedure. So we have to see them within 30 days and update their history and physical. So if I'm having to go through all that stuff again, then I always thought it was warranted to build a longer office visit because we're discussing all those things again and doing them again to make sure that we can get the procedure done.
Okay. So are you actually listening to the heart and the lungs and doing an eye exam?
I listen to their heart and lungs on the initial visit, you know, when they have their initial history and physical. But I'm not an ophthalmologist or, you know, I'm not a primary care physician. And, you know, yes, I do it to complete the things, but, you know, I look at their eyes. I mean, if I see something that's obviously different, do I use special instruments to look at their eyes and their retina and the blood flow? No, I don't do that. But, I mean, I look at their general overall health and watch their chest rise and fall and look for equal breath sounds. I mean, I do all those things. Ask them if they have any gastrointestinal issues, feel around on their belly, make sure that they don't have any quadrant pain. I mean, I go above and beyond my scope of practice. I think, you know, doing the history and physical and making sure all that stuff is documented so that patients don't have an issue when they're on the table. Things change pretty quick, or they're like, oh, I forgot to tell you, I did have a heart attack. Oh, you know what, I do have sleep apnea, but there's a big deal. Yeah, I have a CPAP machine, I just don't use it. You know, and you run into those things all the time. So I try to be as thorough as I can.
Okay, so, and then we...
And being thorough takes time, you know.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, Dr. Rosales. You're kind of fading in and out there a little bit. The other question that Dr. Saunders talked about was on the billing, too, for the operative report, that it should have just been in the charge for the fasciotomy because a fasciectomy wasn't performed. Your operative report didn't indicate that a fasciectomy was performed. There was, you know, no fascia that was removed and sent to pathology because your post-op note, or the note says no specimen for pathology. The tendon sheath injection that's going to be part of the procedure again. It wasn't dictated or documented. Nothing about, you know, what type of dressing that you put on the patient after the surgery. So I think, you know, some of the documentation could have been more descriptive.
I definitely can do a better job with that, and I understand that. After looking at the report, yes, I didn't document any, you know, the fasciectomy. I just documented the one procedure code. Not really much to address them when you do those procedures. It's essentially a Band-Aid. But I certainly can address that going forward. And for most of my procedures, we use more of a dressing. I'll say, you know, we put sutures in the surgical site, there are subcuticular skin type of suture that I use. I'm not adhering dressing over the wound with 4x4s, clean Curlex ACE bandage, or postoperative splint, or a cast, or a replacement of cam walker. I do usually include that in the note, but for the 10X procedures, I will usually just say
Another question I had, do you maintain, when you do the ultrasound-guided injections in your office, do you maintain an image in the patient's chart for that?
Yes, ma'am, and I thought they were included. I looked at the notes that I sent over the board, and there are some images there. We saved them and we put them on the patient's chart. I have one. If this time set, one for 11:18:19 at 10:14 a.m. for Peter Kuchabob. There's one for, there's one, two. Yes, we typically put those in the patient's chart. And I have some images there. I mean, they don't look very well because they're photocopies of a still ultrasound image, but that's pretty standard that we will do the ultrasound, we do the injection. Now I just do a recording of it, and then I'll save a time clip of the injection or the procedure, which you can see, and then we upload that to the patient's chart. And we had just got an ultrasound machine. Again, we had used it in the past, but then we had some issues with the machine we were using, so we had got a Butterfly IQ, I think it was in October of last year, September or October. But we do typically keep the images, and they're uploaded in the patient's chart. And I apologize if you didn't get those, but I thought you had to receive the entire document. The images came over as a black page. And they're backed up on an iCloud system through the system as well as through the EMR.
I'm going to, Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Rosales?
Yes, this is Dr. Foreman. One question I have is that, are you documenting what you're actually injecting into the patient?
No, I typically don't. I mean, I just say they were given an injection of a cocktail or they were given a cortical injection. You know, I guess we can look to a read to see what I put in there and see what they can say. But it's just, let me see, injection, heal. Sterile prep of the heel is performed. I give, just about everybody.
Right. Are you using Kenalog? Is this what you're injecting actually should be in the note? Not just a corticosteroid. What local, how much you're injecting, that should be documented.
Okay, and I don't typically do that. I just put cortical injection left heel under aseptic technique. We've never had an issue with any of the insurance companies or Medicare when they request medical records. They've never said, what did you use specifically? If it's, we're billing for the substance, then they'll ask for the NDC number, which we procure from the vial that we use that's in the shelves. But they've never asked for any additional documentation in the clinical note as to how much and this and that, but I certainly can make a change and include that in there if that's standard of care. I've never heard that in any seminars or anything, but I certainly can do that.
Okay. And the second question, are you billing for a nerve injection or are you billing a plantar fascia trigger point injection?
So typically, I had the biller write down some codes here. So prior to getting the ultrasound machine, we were doing just a nerve block to 64450, and then we do a cortico block, 20605, I think is the code that we were using. And now the codes have changed a little bit. ultrasound guided injection code. I think it's a 76941 along with the 20550. And then if it's a joint injection, we don't bill for the ultrasound. We'll just bill for whatever size joint it is. If it's a medium joint, it's a 20606. That's typically what we do. When we got the ultrasound machine, they sent over a list of codes that we're supposed to be using, so getting that figured out, and, you know, that was a little different than the standard.
Right.
You know, fascia or trigger point injections that we were using before.
That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. Dr. Yolano?
Yes, Dr. Rosales, I've got a question for you. Do you generally give an ankle blast for plantar fascial injection?
Yes, I do. Every time.
Okay. Can you give me the reason why you give ankle blocks? And which nerve do you block?
I typically block the posterior tibial nerve and sometimes the sural nerve if they're not completely anesthetized prior to the injection. And it does take more time, but I've, did my own little study when I first started practice on patients, 20 of them getting nerve blocks and then 20 of them not getting nerve blocks. And it seemed, that 80 or more percent of patients would prefer to have the nerve block prior to the injection because it's a lot less comfortable and they tolerate it a lot better. So it's just become a standard practice. Sometimes we get paid for them, sometimes we don't. And I just think it's good patient care, and that's just has become my standard of practice. Patients seem to appreciate it, so I continue to do it.
Do you,
15 minutes, but I think if they're more comfortable, I'd rather wait an extra 15 minutes.
And they're okay to drive home with that block?
Yes, they are. And I talk to them, and if they're not comfortable having the injection, then I tell them that their foot is going to be numb, and if you have a long ways to drive or travel, then you may want to come back another day so that you have someone to drive you. If it's your gas or if it's your gas and brake foot.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to reiterate that. My concerns for of your documentation in regards to what nerve was blocked and the amount of medicines that was utilized and which medicines were utilized.
So include that in the note as well. I blocked the posterior tibial nerve and the sural nerve. Okay.
Yeah. And also, when you, instead of using the plantar fascial, you used a joint block or a joint injection instead of the plantar fascial injection. Was that fixed or rectified with your new program?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question, but there are two different codes that we use now, one for the plantar fascial injection. So for the plantar surface now, we use I believe it's a 20550.
On one of your visits, you used 20605.
Yes.
I believe that was on 927.
Okay. When I first saw him, yes.
Yes. Yes. And that should have been a 20550. Is that correct? A plantar fascial injection?
It should have been.
Okay. And you've taken steps to correct that?
Yes, we have. We've run a pretty lean office staff. We've only had two employees. And, to my detriment, and looking back even through the patient's chart, there were some other things that were not billed. His orthotics were not billed correctly. We should have collected for those at the time of service. And, that's been an issue in the past. He was given a cam walker, this patient was, and we didn't charge for it just because we're, seeing too many patients and not documenting things the way that we're supposed to and moving too fast. So we did have an outside billing company come in and look at all of our past accounts receivable and consider doing the billing here in the office for us. But after looking through all of our stuff, that they thought that we did it, you know, a good job, and they gave us some things to work on. We hired an additional person, hired two additional people. One left because of COVID-related issues with her family and stuff, so we're in the process. We have someone starting in another 2 weeks. So the additional staff and the additional employee that we hired has some billing experience, so they can help with that. And we're trying to do a better job. I sent the two staff members that I have that do the billing to an online course in December or January. I'm happy to send that over to you so you can see that and to try to just better educate themselves on the changes that happen, you know, in the billing world, because things change so fast and so often.
I have no further questions. Thank you, Dr. Rosales.
Mr. Rhodes, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. All righty. Well, I think, and with our line of questioning, obviously, the members of the board are concerned with the, and is what Dr. Saunders presented in his report, concern about coding and, again, with the documentation. So I'd like to make a motion to issue an order for non-disciplinary CME regarding coding and documentation, which would include 3 hours of CME for coding, 3 hours on documentation that should be completed within 6 months of the order. These courses must be board approved, and this is in addition to CMEs that are necessary for yearly licensure, and of course, doctors responsible for all associated costs.
Second.
Oh yes, and those courses can be done online. Well, that's in rule. It's in rule that all CME courses can be done online. So that's yes.
Second.
And I have a second from Mr. Rhodes. Do we have any other discussion? So because of being virtual, we'll take a voice vote. Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Mr. Rhodes?
Aye.
It's been moved and seconded in unanimous vote for the non-disciplinary CME order. Dr. Rosales and Mr. Moscow, Heather will be in contact with you regarding that order. So with that concluded, we can move on to the second complaint, which is 20-12-C. With Dr. Rosales, your attorney again, Mr. Moscow, is present. I don't know if the complainant AM is present. We haven't heard anybody come in to the, she did come into the call? Okay. So as a reminder, when we ask the complainant for a brief summary that we're always referred to by initials. So Dr. Saunders also is the investigator for this case. So I will ask Dr. Saunders to present his summary. Thank you. Dr. Saunders.
Okay. So this one, again, is a concern really regarding the billing aspect. There's three concerns. One is an improper office visit charge on the visit on 1-7-2020. There was a concern regarding interpersonal kind of disposition, and complainant thought that the doctor just was rude to the patient. And then as a throw-in, they were concerned regarding the safety into the entrance. As a summary of the event, patient was referred from the emergency room to Dr. Rosales regarding an injury to her great toe. Apparently, the patient was seen at an emergency room, told that she had a fracture, was instructed to stay off of it until, I guess, follow-up care. And then the patient sought off Dr. Rosales and went in for a visit. They did not hit it off, to say the least. There was some confusion regarding the radiographs that were given to the doctor to evaluate, and he believed that they were the wrong patient and wanted to take some new x-rays. As he went to go take the x-ray, he wanted her to do a typical stand on for the x-ray, and the patient was unhappy with this, did not want to put her foot down, and did not really allow any follow-up evaluation or examination to be done. Doctor did his best, it appears, to give some recommendations based on the information that he had. And that kind of was it. They just did not really hit it off too well. The easy parts here, I had Doctor send in some pictures of his office, as the complainant was concerned regarding the accessibility, and it appears to be just fine, handicap accessible, without any problems. As far as conduct, going through the notes, I think the doctor handled himself appropriately without any conduct issues. In regards to the billing, the doctor billed a 99203. There really is no evaluation that is performed to justify that, and I think we discussed this a little bit during the last case. There's no documentation, there's no real physical examination to warrant the 99203. I do think the doctor should bill for his time, as he did evaluate the patient and did try to make an honest effort and give some advice. I just don't necessarily think it meets the 99203. Outside that, everything else looks fine.
Thank you very much, Dr. Saunders. Dr. Ulano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders at this time?
No.
I have no questions.
Mr. Rhodes, sir.
For Dr. Saunders.
Okay. And I do not... All right, so as we noted, we have the complainant on the line, and the initials are AM, and ma'am, we will ask you to try to summarize your remarks in about 5 minutes. So please proceed.
Thank you. First, I just have to comment that the synopsis, I'm not sure who everybody is given this being teleconference, but whoever provided that synopsis sounded like they were reporting for the purposes of the board and not Dr. Rosales. And that characterization is grossly inaccurate. And so I'm just going to go through from that perspective and describe how I will not agree that disposition, if it persists, will go without further complaint, if that in fact is the board's takeaway, because this was a scenario where I was very vulnerable, as many people are who are ill or injured seeking health care, and I, in my entire lifetime of receiving a variety of health care, I have never been treated as callously and abrasively as I was in this instance. There is no question that the tone and demeanor of the provider, Dr. Rosales, was intimidating. It would have been intimidating to any average person. I am not easily intimidated, and that's a little bit of an understatement. my work, my personal life, they you know, orient me to deal with people that are customarily intimidating to the general public. And so, but I was in a lot of pain. I was distressed that I had traveled and could not easily access his office. I don't know what in the world the conclusion is based on, that office is appropriately oriented to people who are not ambulatory. It is not oriented to people who are not ambulatory unless you have some type of personal assistant. And even then, in poor weather conditions where it's situated, that's going to be an added risk to a second person, not just the patient seeking care. But mostly my concern was the fact that I was billed given the combination of the disposition, and to say I didn't hit it off, I will not accept that dismissal from whoever's remark that was. Absolutely unacceptable, patronizing, one-sided, just biased, okay? Not acceptable. No one representing this matter to the board should ever portray that unless they're trying to defend Dr. Rosales, and I would urge the examiners to dismiss it as biased even in such an instance as that, because it has nothing to do with the specifics of the interaction.
Pardon me, so, ma'am. No, if you would please keep your comments to be respectful so that we can treat you also respectfully. Thank you.
My comments were respectful, ma'am. Bias is a chronic issue in every forum, and so that is actually not a disrespectful term. If the board considers it such, then there are other issues at work. My transition before you commented in that sense was that what is the core of the issue in this instance was that I was billed, expected to pay money, which I will not pay. I will not be required to pay this. If I am required to pay this, again, this complaint will escalate to other forums. I was ordered by Dr. Rosales in order to receive any diagnostic opinion from him to put weight on my injured foot. He had no basis, and I made this clear in my complaint. I don't know where this information went. He had no basis to conclude that I was properly capable of weight bearing on that foot at the time of that appointment. He had no x-rays. He had my original x-rays sent from the hospital. He had no follow-up information that I'm aware of. And so he had never examined me. He understood the nature of the fracture, but it had only been, I believe, less than 30 days at that time. There was no basis to conclude it was healed and so on. What is stunning beyond that? And that's sufficient by itself. That's just gross malpractice. What is stunning beyond that is that he has an x-ray field on the floor, and why no one in the entire scheme of his office, in any sense, offered me a chair, a stool, or just some assistance so I could stand upright and extend my leg without putting weight on my foot is unacceptable. It's beyond unacceptable. And, you know, his disposition just made the matter more stunning. I find it consistent with the previous matter where he's not documenting any cocktail ingredients. I don't know how the board glassed over that one. But again, I'm not the attorney. I'm not the person in that instance. But these types of approaches to his work are not acceptable. They're inconsistent with his status as a licensed healthcare provider. So, you know, again, the characterization was grossly dismissive and biased. That's not offensive. That's my right as the person who's the complainant to point out. And it's not acceptable. And so if we're going to go through all this, and everyone is taking time to be here except for those who are paid, then, you know, this needs to be appropriate. And appropriate is focused on the facts. The facts are what I'm telling you. I have never in my lifetime filed a complaint against any healthcare provider, which says everything. This was over the top, okay? Something needs to be done. There is no license to behave and conduct yourself in the manner Dr. Rosales did during my appointment. That's not a real thing. The licensing process is completely antithetical to that. It's supposed to sift and assure a certain standard of care in every instance. So this was intentional disregard by the provider with absolutely no sense of any consequence or supervision. So that's why we're here.
Ma'am, I have a question for you. Was anyone present with you during that exam that can corroborate your viewpoint?
No, I made that clear in my complaint. I was in the room by myself.
Now, and also, I understand you got your doctor's office worked at getting your x-rays from the hospital in Sholo, which I believe you picked those up, right, to bring to your appointment?
No, again, that's confused. The medical records, I made a great effort to get the hospital where I first was assessed to send my images to Dr. Rosales' office in advance of my appointment. I got confirmation from his office that they finally had received those. I brought with me a separate set of images from my doctor's office, my treating doctor's office, which is more than 2 hours away, because I wanted him to have the most up-to-date set of images. And so, you know, he had an understanding of the nature of my original injury. He did not have an up-to-date set of images. I was more than agreeable for him to take another set. So again, the characterization of this case, I don't understand where in the world that even comes from, the degree of coloration, of colorizing, and it's not going to go without additional complaint because this is not a fair forum when someone is taking those liberties, if you will. I don't even think that's what that is, but I used to be a judge, so I'm not going to be quiet about those types of distortions in this particular instance that actually relates to me personally. That's not going to happen here.
So you had a fall in 12 of 19, and you're saying now that there were two sets of x-rays, that there was the ones from Sholo, that I'm imagining that's where you went to have when you initially injured yourself, right?
Yes, the treating facilities. Initial assessment was the Summit Healthcare Facility in Sholo, Arizona.
Okay, so then you were mentioning another set of x-rays that were taken by a primary care physician.
No, it was taken by a different podiatrist, actually.
Okay, well, that's okay.
A different licensed, supervised Arizona healthcare provider. That's right.
So there's some indication that, so that was the x-rays that came from the Sholo Hospital, which were the wrong patient?
No, the doctor's office told me the ones I carried in, which were from my doctor's office, were not the right set of images. And he wanted another set. And so I said, okay, that's fine. And so I was more than happy to have another set of images. The problem had nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with Dr. Rosales' orientation during my appointment. It was not appropriate for him to order me to put weight on that extremity in order for him to get another set of images. That was not appropriate. I don't know why that's not the focus here. That's the nature of my complaint. The fact that he's charging me money for this is just over the top. Okay, that's just the cherry on the top of the arrogance. That's not even the right word.
Okay, thank you. I would like to know if my board members have questions for the complainant. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolano?
No.
At the time you were healing, AM, were you even able to bear weight on that cam boot?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
At the time of your healing, a cam boot with the stent, were you able to bear weight on that?
I was ordered not to, unless it was absolutely necessary. This was an x-ray with a barefoot. At no time did anybody in any direction before Dr. Rosales' office stent suggest at all that I should put any weight on my bare foot. No.
So you didn't bear weight going to the bathroom, getting something to eat, drink, or anything like that? You didn't bear weight on it? Did you use crutches?
I'm sorry, it's garbled, so I didn't hear the list of your question. I heard crutches, but not the previous portion of the question.
Were you using crutches?
Very, very minimally, because I have a different injury to my upper torso that made that very challenging. So.
Okay. I wasn't
ambulatory. It was very different. When I got to Dr. Rosales' office, I had a scooter I was using.
Okay. At any point, did you put down the cam boot on the floor, or did you use the scooter all the time?
I don't understand the question. And I have to comment, I feel like I am being interrogated. What is that about? That's not appropriate.
We're allowed, ma'am, to ask you questions, too, because my board members are trying to clarify things. So this is the typical, this is procedure. This is not a courtroom. And we're just trying to, this is what's called an initial review. We're gathering information in addition to the reports that we had received. So you're not being interrogated. We're just asking questions.
But the same question has been asked three different ways. What is the exact question that is at issue for my purposes? My behavior is not at issue. This has nothing to do with my behavior.
Mr. Rhodes, do you have any questions?
Did you bear weight on that handle?
AM certainly knows how. I was going to say AM certainly knows how to browbeat people. She did sign a consent to have an X-ray. Am I not right?
That generally is in, yes, any kind of consent to treat when you sign paperwork at an office. Yes, that is part of it.
Yes. Okay.
I'm sorry. Let me stop. How does anybody know?
And that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
How does anybody know what I signed without asking and discovering what those forms actually say?
Well, we have them in our. They're part of the.
What difference does that make? I said I agreed wholeheartedly to another set of X-rays. So what, again, this is completely biased. This is not going without objection. I'm sorry. You know, the person wasn't even here for the previous hearing. And the issue at that instance were the things covered, but the fact that there was comment that the cocktail ingredients need to be documented, that went without action, doesn't set this up very well. And now that I'm actually here, you don't have the latitude to dislike my style of comment. It's appropriate, it's very clear, and you don't have the latitude to go there in this proceeding.
Okay, we appreciate your comment. It's time now to hear from Dr. Rosales, and his attorney is present also, Mr. Moskow. So, gentlemen. Mr. Moskow or Dr. Rosales, it's your turn, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. This is Tim Moskow.
Oh, yes,
I'll give Dr. Rosales the bulk of the time to respond. I'll just point out that there's no dispute over the fact that the complainant, you know, refused to take an X-ray. She's explaining today that it was solely based on having to put weight on her foot, but. You know, she's seeing a podiatrist who's doing his best to treat her, and she's just simply not willing to participate. She expressed her reasoning for that, but the bottom line is you can't force a patient, obviously, to accept treatment. I think, and with regard for billing, you know, I believe the billing code, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the billing code is a new patient visit. This was a new patient visit. Dr. Rosales did give his time, energy, effort to attempting to treat this patient. So I think it was a perfectly acceptable thing to bill for his time. Taking into account the fact that he was dealing with a patient that refused treatment. Beyond that, I'll let Dr. Rosales respond, obviously, to the complaint. Dr. Rosales, would you like to add anything?
Just as far as the office visit goes, we did try to go above and beyond, I thought, to try to get her medical records and to get her x-rays and to figure out where they came from and try to have all that stuff. So we had a complete medical record to review when she came in for her appointment, but we were never able to get her medical records from the emergency room where she was previously treated or from the other podiatrist's office that she was seen at. So I know we tried multiple times, and we were not able to get the initial assessment or any of her medical records. They did mail over her x-rays. Unfortunately, they were for the wrong patient. She didn't hand carry any x-rays. If she did, they were not of her foot that I could tell. I did ask her to remove her boot when I came into the room, and the chair sits right next to the wall-mounted x-ray machine. The arm extends, kind of over the front of the plate. She could have sat down there, and I could have taken an x-ray there without her putting a lot of weight on it, but a partial weight bearing, x-ray is acceptable, and as far as my training goes, I am board certified. I do surgery. I used to do quite a bit of trauma care during residency and my first few years when I came out of residency training and in private practice. So I would never do anything intentionally to, hurt a patient. I really tried to get along with everybody and provide excellent patient care. I mean, I've been in practice for 15 years here in Flagstaff. It's a small community, and I don't think I would have had that luxury if I was coarse to patients or if my demeanor was as such. Sorry she had the experience she had. I mean, I truly do try to do the best that I can for patients that come in. As far as the billing code for the patient, I mean, we did spend time trying to get her medical records at the office and took time trying to explain to her the reason why I needed her to take her boot off so that I could examine her foot. I don't know why. I mean, Cholo is, 2+ hours from our office, and there are, at least 2 or 3 other podiatrists, at least 3 other podiatrists and a foot and ankle surgeon as well as orthopedist there in Cholo for her to see. I know she rescheduled her appointment, at least 3 times at our office, which, we accommodated her. So I think I built the appropriate code given the time that we put into it. That's about all I have to say.
Thank you. Board members, it's time to discuss. What are your feelings of this? Dr. Ilana or Dr. Foreman?
Can I ask Dr. Rosales a question? This is Dr. Foreman.
Go ahead, Dr. Foreman.
Dr. Rosales? Did you ask the patient to be fully weight-bearing on the x-ray machine?
I asked her to remove her cam walker and to sit in the chair so that I could examine her foot.
Okay.
She would not take off her cam walker.
Dr. Rosales, on the previous records, it was what you had was a fracture of the hallux. Anything else fractured in the foot?
No, I wasn't able to actually see her x-rays from what I recall because the x-rays that were sent were of a different patient. I never was able to see even her old x-rays, nor was I able to get an exact time of the injury. I wasn't sure if it was actually in December or it was earlier in the year. It was not clear. And I didn't have any other medical records to substantiate what she was saying. So had I been able to look at it, then I could have assessed it more in depth, obviously. And like I said, the exam chair is right next to there. And if she's standing up on the boot or she's able to, she can put weight on her heel and we can take a
a limited weight-bearing film on the plate that's on the floor that's right next to the exam chair. I mean, there's a rail there to hang on to. There's a side of the chair there to hang on to. You know, we have help in the office if she needs help standing, but she could have sat there on the chair and just swung her foot around, and I can move the head of the x-ray over. It's a wall-mounted, it's an old Belmont x-ray, you know, and it has a lot of latitude, so we certainly could have accommodated her.
How much time did you spend going over her records and spending time with the patient, do you recall?
I don't recall this. You know, I went in there, I introduced myself, we talked about what was going on. I asked her to take off her boot. She wouldn't take off her boot. I tried to explain to her why I needed her to take off her boot so that I could examine it. I left the room. I went to go look at her x-rays that I thought were hers. You know, it took a few minutes to pull up. It was on a CD from what I recall. After going through them, I didn't see any fracture there, which was odd. I thought I went back into the room and just said, well, I don't see any fracture on your foot. We need to take some x-rays to further assess what's going on. But I don't understand. You know, there's a fracture there. It's like, okay, go back over there. Look at them again. Well, it's not the correct patient. The information was sent over for us to evaluate. So I went back in and explained to her that those were not her x-rays and that I couldn't, you know, give her a complete examination and treat her appropriately or make any secondary recommendations if I was not able to examine her foot, physically examine it, or radiographically examine them. And she didn't hand carry any of her medical records. It's kind of odd to me that she would travel that far when there's other providers in the area that can provide care for her, a second opinion. But I understand I'm an SE patient from over there, and I have never had any issues.
I have no.
So, no, I can't remember how much time, but it's, you know, all that includes time. It was probably more than 30 minutes. You know, if I had to get a stopwatch or something and time myself, or time, you know, that it took for the medical office staff to try to be on the phone with the hospital and try to get medical records and x-rays two or three times, I'm sure it was in excess of 30 minutes.
No further questions.
All right. So if anybody has any, Bob, my board members, no further comments. If anybody has anything, statement to make from my board, otherwise I will entertain a motion.
I'd move to dismiss 20-12-C. With no violation of statute or professional.
Second the motion.
Pardon me. No, ma'am. You've had, ma'am. I'm sorry.
I didn't.
No, ma'am.
That was all lies. That was all lies. There is no basis to dismiss anything.
We're still. It was inappropriate. You've had your time. We're still in the middle of a motion here. Thank you. Mr. Rhodes, will you repeat your motion?
I would move to dismiss this. I would like to ask for a letter of concern on documentation on this.
For the level of code that was charged?
Yes.
And that code is? 99203. Do I have a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Ulano. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none. Do you need to make a Seeing none, we'll take a vote. Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Mr. Rhodes?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. This case is completed. Our final case and then is for Dr. Todd Lamster. The case is 20-14-C. Dr. Lamster is present on the phone as well as his counsel, Mr. Muskow. We did have the complainant here. I believe they sent out for a minute. So, Heather, we'll, how about that? We're going to, before we begin, then we'll take a 5-minute recess to go find the complainant. Thank you.
Off the record. Well, that was that lady. I would have.
I'm on. Dr. Foreman's on.
Are you there?
I'm here. Present.
Dr. Lamster and Mr. Muskow present?
Dr. Lamster is here.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Ken Moskow still here. Thank you.
All right. So, Dr. Polakoff is the investigator. Are you there, Dr. Polakoff?
I'm right here. Good morning, board.
Good morning.
This is Dr. Polakoff on 2014C, Todd Lamster. The patient, CM, initiated a complaint against Dr. Todd Lamster for concerns of plantar fasciitis treatment. The doctor, he reports, waited from February 2019 until October 2019 to order an MRI due to the heel pain that was not relieved by injections, physical therapy, shoe changes, orthotics, etc. The MRI, according to the patient, showed that the fascia was ripped. Surgery was performed on November 7th, 2019. The surgical course appeared to be fine with the exception of the patient refused to take the pain medications, which is the patient's right. But the concern to this investigator is that the patient also had concerns about taking the antibiotic for possible MRSA infections, which I do believe could have jeopardized his surgical care. The doctor reports that despite a presumed battery of tests and medical examinations from multiple neurologists, three of them, and an orthopedist, there was no organic basis of CM's foot pain. It is unclear what CM has alleged against Dr. Lamster. Dr. Lamster was in a practice where he saw CM, and he did leave that practice for his own practice, and CM and the patient and Dr. Lamster have not resumed professional care after he left the practice. The surgery was performed on November 7th, 2019, and the patient did not appear to be improving from the surgery. He had pain, which appeared to be increasing, and he did report that he did not stay off of his foot. Injections were given postoperatively and preoperatively, but did not seem to help. The conclusion is I found no findings in this report that were out of the standard of care for treatment of plantar fascial strain or injury. The doctor did all the typical standard of care treatments of injections, orthotics, physical therapy, shoe modifications that are used to treat plantar fasciitis. My conclusion was unsubstantiated.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff. Dr. Yolano, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
No questions.
Thank you. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Mr. Rhodes, no questions. And I also do not have any questions for Dr. Polakoff. Other than, oh, and Dr. Polakoff, there weren't any, you had no concerns about any of the billing or coding, correct?
No, ma'am, I did not.
Thank you. All right, so we have our complainant is present, and so it's his turn. His initials are CM, so we'll ask him to come to the table there. And, sir, when you're settled and ready, if you would just give us your summary. You comfortable?
Yes.
Okay, so please tell us your summary of your care and concerns, et cetera.
I guess my first concern was why Dr. Lamster didn't order the MRI right away. Why, I guess he put me through all the treatment programs and then, you know, almost a year down the road, we did an MRI and found out that no wonder I was complaining so much why nothing was working, and then we found out why. So that's my first concern, is why that was waited so long for that. And we knew it was going to be a simple surgery, but it turned out not to be a simple surgery because of all the complications I've had since the surgery. It was a good foot, no operations on that foot until this operation, but something happened to the nerves in there, which now are causing the foot to have a lot of nerve pain, which I'm on probably my fourth or fifth nerve drug called nortrepiline. It's a drug that was used for depression years ago, but now they're finding out it's used for nerve pain. I've been on that for several months. It does some coverage, but it doesn't take away all that nerve pain and stabbing and burning that you have down there. It was a perfectly good foot. Now I can't run, jump, put hardly any pressure on it. I have a permanent limp. I can't get my arch back to where it used to be. I'm just at a loss right now what to do with this foot. I think right now I'm seeing an orthopedic surgeon who's either the number one surgeon in the country, if not in Arizona, called Dr. John Corey. I've been visiting him now since April, and he has multiple surgeries that foot needs to be done, but we're just putting it off because, once again, surgeries on your feet are non-weight-bearing. Up to 8 to 12 weeks, and that's a heavy toll on a person if you live by yourself and you don't have any assistance. So, and I guess my second concern was what went wrong in this surgery to have me end up like this with a non-functioning foot, needing more surgeries. What the orthopedic surgeon, Dr. John Corey, explained to me recently was that we can correct the first metatarsal, the second metatarsal, but we can't, he doesn't know how to correct the plantar fasciitis that we just had operated on. He mentioned to me it was a nerve a mile long, the name of it, but he called it the Baxter nerve. And he mentioned that maybe we have something wrong with this nerve called the Baxter nerve. So, at this point, if I do see Dr. John Corey again, the orthopedic surgeon, he's going to recommend, for the 100th time surgery. But we don't know how we're going to correct the first surgery. We don't know that at this point, if that can be corrected. It would be nice to have a functioning foot again, but at this point, it is non-functionable. And there is no pain or medicine that I could take right now to alleviate any of this. That's what's going on. In 1960, I was born with retinitis pigmentosa, retinopathy of prematurity. So I've been legally blind all my life. Don't have a driver's license, so I do not drive. So my feet are my main part of transportation. And I feel that has been taken away from me because it's hard for me to walk now. It's just hard to walk, put pressure on it, put one foot in front of the other. There's no stability in the foot anymore. It's just a bad situation that happened, and I don't know why. We had MRSA 10 years ago in the left foot that almost left me in death. You know, I was on death's door, and they do emerging surgery to correct that MRSA and that left foot. So that's always been my bad foot, and so I was hoping that my right foot would always be my good foot. So at this point, I don't have any good feet. And my guide dog, Nike, he's my car. You know, once we put the harness on, we go. And so, you know, at this point, it's very hard to get him out and go if I can't go. And that's another issue I have. You know, I'm kind of homebound right now, and I don't like that. You know, when you can't walk, you know, I don't know if I have to train Nike to pull me around in a wheelchair eventually, but, you know, I just don't like the situation I'm in right now. And I don't know if an MRI in the very beginning would have maybe made the foot heal better or faster, but after surgery, I still have a dip in there. Nothing really has healed properly since the surgery back in November. You can still feel all the you can just feel everything from that operation. And I've had hundreds of operations, guys. Mostly in my eyes, not so much my body. You know, but something didn't go well in this one, and I don't know why, but the reason why I filed this complaint was I was just upset that the MRI wasn't taken immediately. So we could have skipped all that pain and suffering for the next 8-9 months. And go down that road of always guessing, you know, what do we do next? So I'm retired from the federal government. I started in about 1980. I was brought into the vesting stretch of the Food and Drug Administration. So I'm retired 20 years from FDA as an investigator. So isn't it I spent a lot of time investigating this case. I just took it from a standpoint of as just a civilian and what happened to me, you know. So it's been very disheartening that after all these surgeries I've had throughout my life, why this little foot operation, plantar fasciitis, has really taken its toll on something that's been very active and out there in the community. So I was just upset with how things proceeded during that time. And not knowing the future right now and what can or can't be done with that right foot, you know, with any more surgeries. But I think I'm on board with the right orthopedic surgeon. He's taking his time with me, and you know, he doesn't want to get in any trouble either. You know, the PETA guy does not want to go down the same road we just went down. So, at this point, guys, that's all I got to say.
Well, thank you very much. What did you say the disease you were diagnosed with?
They didn't diagnose it till the 70s, but I was born with something called prematurity of retinopathy. And you know, at birth, when you're really premature, they stick you in incubation for many, many months. And I think I was in there for about 10 months, guys. I weighed 1 pound, 12 ounces.
So
that's what happened to my eyes.
Yeah. Retinopathy.
Yes.
So when you were a child, did you have any nerve problems with, you know, nothing?
Nothing.
The disease process didn't affect...
It was just kept to the eyes, yes.
Did so you never developed any diabetes or anything like that over?
No, but after the foot surgery, we found out that I'm borderline diabetic
okay,
right now.
Okay, so yeah, because we
just found out.
Okay, so because with the nerve studies that were done on when you went to have the nerve studies, it showed that you have a a neuropathy. Yes, it says neurophysical evidence of moderate to severe large fiber sensory motor polyneuropathy. So, this is something too that had developed over time, that certainly can be a reason for the nerve pain that you're experiencing. You can't, it's like trying to pin it on having had surgery. You can't really make a exact distinction that caused it, because it sounds like this has probably been going on for a while. Like I said, with just having been recently diagnosed with borderline diabetes, as we know that that's kind of something that kind of is laying low for a while and takes a while to develop. It doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
And I can tell you, too, a lot of, that typically most people don't jump into doing the MRI right away. Of course, I wasn't, when we're not there to see, the progression of how decisions are made, that's something that Dr. Lamster will, impart to us from when he gives his viewpoint. So it's unfortunate when things like that happen, particularly when you also had the history of MRSA in your left foot. So that kind of sets you up for,
mm-hmm.
That happening to you again with surgeries down the line. I mean, that's sad fact, but that's how it is, and that certainly can appreciate that that you don't try because of your eyes, obviously, so that your feet are very, very important to you and being mobile. So and it's you said you've been to several neurologists.
I think
you're taking a medication to help with the nerve pain.
Yep, I consulted all my doctors consulted me to a doctor to quarterback all my other doctors, and it was Dr. James Keller. He's a DO, and he's the one who got me into this nortriptyline, which seems to be doing something than nothing. Mm-hmm. So we give him the credit for that. But
have you been to physical therapy or anything like that?
Yes.
To try to help strengthen? Okay.
Yes. I've done everything I can, basically, up to this point.
Let me ask my board members who are telephonic. Dr. Gorman or Foreman or Dr. Yolano, do you have questions for CM, please?
I think I don't have any questions.
Thank you. Dr. Yolano, do you have any questions?
No, CM. I sympathize with your pain, but I don't have any questions. Well said, Dr. Campbell.
Thank you. Mr. Rhodes, sir? All right. Thank you. You can remain seated. Nobody else is here, so be comfortable. Dr. Lamster, and are you ready to make your statement?
I am ready, yes.
Okay. Please proceed.
Hello?
Yes, please proceed, Dr. Lamster.
Thank you. I remember CM very well. And I certainly empathize with his condition. I know that through my many office visits with him, he suffered a great deal, actually on both feet, and of course, with me specifically, the plantar fascia on the right foot. I'd like to first address with the board the concerns with the MRI and the timing of the MRI. In my experience, certainly going through an algorithm of conservative care is of utmost importance, and that included, by the way, not just doing a physical exam, but also looking forward to radiographic examination and ultrasonic evaluation. I did both of those modalities in the office to, in my opinion, thoroughly evaluate his foot and his complaints prior to going to the MRI. Anyone who's been in practice for a long time knows that different modalities will show different things, but because of time, money, and certainly looking at clinical practice guidelines. We do things in a certain order, in a certain way, because most patients get better with that algorithm. And of course, my own experience shows that to be true. So initial radiographs were completed, ultrasound evaluation was completed, and I thought we had a good plan for him moving forward, as I do with many, many patients. Injection therapy, physical therapy, orthotics, and so forth, unfortunately did not provide him with any meaningful long-term relief. And in my estimation at that point, an MRI is warranted. An MRI usually is not warranted prior to failure of conservative care and prior to evaluation with other lesser modalities, not only because of time, but also because of cost. So I believe that the MRI timing was absolutely appropriate, and he had other diagnostic modalities prior, as I've already indicated. With regards to the surgical procedure, again, I think according to the algorithm of care, it was done at the appropriate time. The surgery itself, I also remember, went according to plan. There was nothing that had occurred in the perioperative stage that would have told me that he would have had such a difficult postoperative stage. Indeed, yes, he had a very difficult postoperative course. That is absolutely true and is well documented. He had significant pain, some of it musculoskeletal, but most of it, in my opinion, neurological and also related to the wound that was on the medial side of his heel. He had a tremendous amount of wound pain. And indeed, an injection was done just to debride the wound at one point, a nerve block, which actually provided him with significant relief. That nerve block was performed in the tarsal tunnel in order to give him relief and allow me to do what I needed to do regarding the wound on that date of visit. Regarding his course, as I can recall, I still think he has a lot of neurological symptomatology. I'm certainly glad that he's under the care of other physicians, and he's getting some relief with the nortriptyline, as he already stated. But you know, in my summary, I think I did everything according to the proper standard of care, according to the normal algorithm and those set forth in clinical guidelines regarding evaluation and treatment of the plantar fascial condition. And I wanted to say one other thing, too, prior to finishing, is that he did continue to, report to you guys that it was his good foot, his right foot was his good foot. But in all honesty, in my experience with him, it was never his good foot until, you know, he certainly came to see me because he was experiencing severe pain in his right foot. So he developed this condition and saw me for it in an attempt to treat it, but again, he's had unfortunately problems in both feet. And regarding the surgery, I don't think it should have been performed. The plantar fasciotomy, that is, I don't believe it should have been performed prior to completing a full regimen of conservative care, because of his history regarding his left foot. He did have considerable problems on his left foot with surgery, with healing, with MRSA, and so forth. And I did not take that lightly. I, wanted to make sure that we exhausted everything until he came to me one day and just said, I'm experiencing severe pain in my right heel. We got to try to do something else because all the treatment that we've been doing through the office was not helping. And indeed, that was true. And that's where we proceeded to move forward with, again, the MRI and then the surgical procedure. It's unfortunate it didn't really help so much as again, it's been well documented. But I don't think that the surgery itself in any way really contributed to his pain. I know that he feels that way, and I certainly empathize and understand why he would feel that way, but I don't think that that's the case. I think there's a certainly greater systemic or neurological conditions that are a significant contributing factor. Thank you.
Thanks. Doctors Foreman and Yolanda, do you have questions for Dr. Lamster?
No questions for me at this time.
Dr.
No questions for me either.
Okay. Mr. Rose, you have a question? All right. So hearing both sides, I certainly sympathize, obviously, with the complainant that nobody goes into surgery expecting to, have things happen postoperatively or, that the complications are developed. There's nothing that indicates that there was any breach of, you know, of standard of care in the community was followed, the progression of treatment, you know, the, you know, exhaustion of conservative care, I think, was followed. And I agree when Dr. Lamster talks about, you know, when, you know, when MRIs are done, they aren't always, you know, unless there is something just, you know, if there had been a major trauma or some other instance that required that. And the fact, too, that we see now that this gentleman was recently diagnosed with borderline diabetes. So as we all know in practice, you know, patients can have prodromal states for years and may not display any symptoms. So, again, I don't think that we can't, you know, you can't make a direct correlation of a surgery caused a nerve problem. It's been there a long time. And it's unfortunate that this happened. Thank goodness that this gentleman is receiving care, neurologic care, and hopefully that as he goes further with his treatment, that he will be able to be more comfortable in his walking, and that, you know, he's under good care with Dr. Corey. And obviously, you know, we would understand Dr. Corey's hesitation in doing more surgery because you don't, you know, inflict more surgery upon more surgery does not solve problems. So, as I said, again, I, you know, it's unfortunate that we have postoperative complications from things that were, you know, not caused by a surgery, but underlying issues that were not weren't apparent before. So I would move to dismiss the case as there were no violations of state statutes in regard of standard of care for this patient. Thank you. Any discussion?
Second the motion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, I will take a vote. Dr. Ulano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Mr. Rhodes?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. All right. Let's see, gentlemen. We will then move on to our review and discussion number four, review, discussion, possible action on board meeting minutes. That would be A, September the 9th, 2020, general session minutes. Does anyone have any issues with those minutes? Seeing no one has issues with those minutes, I will move to make a motion to accept the general session minutes from day 9-9-2020. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
B is our executive session minutes. Does anyone have any concern with those minutes? Seeing none, I will make a motion to accept the executive session meeting minutes of 9-9-2020 as written. I have a second.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. So moved. All right. We have issuance of licenses, which is 5B. We have one license application, Zeno Fowl. Everything is complete here. This is a application via universal recognition. Fees have been paid. Application is complete, so I will make a motion to accept the application for licensure for Zeno Fowl DPM and presenting the license with proper payment of the licensing issuance fee. Thank you, Ms.
Seconded.
Rhodes. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Post.
Aye.
So moved. Thank you. Then we have one applicant for registration to dispense drugs and devices, Dr. Ryan Bangart. Everything in his application is complete and the fee is paid, so I'll make a motion to accept Dr. Ryan Bangart's application for registration to initial registration to dispense drugs and devices. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All righty. Then we move on to D, which is our compliance update for Dr. Farrell. Heather.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. I received email communication from Dr. Farrell regarding whether he's performed any nerve decompression surgeries, and he did list out the only month that he did one of the procedures was in August of 2020. I did receive those records, and I did send them to Dr. Polakoff for her chart audit report. I'm hoping to get that in time for our November 17th meeting. That's all I have with that item, unless you have any questions.
Thank you, Heather. And then the retention schedule that you've presented, Heather?
Yes. I submitted a draft retention schedule, and I also submitted the current retention schedule for comparison. I'm asking the board to review both retention schedules, the revised and the current, and to potentially approve the revised retention schedule, as the current one is a little dated. I did research other boards' retention schedules, and some of our areas, we are required to keep records for 99 years, whereas other boards are required to keep them for 7 years. So it would be helpful to get the revised retention schedule approved to help with archiving and digitization of the board office. I'm happy to answer any questions.
So Dr. Foreman, Dr. Gorman, did you review those?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any questions or concerns?
No. I do we vote on it?
Well, yeah. And Mr. Rose, did you have any questions? Or Dr. Ulano? Yeah. That's what we just have to make a motion that we've approved these changes, and that way Heather can proceed with.
Right. Because I do have to submit the changes to Library and Archives for approval. So there is a process that I have to go through.
Okay. So. Do you want me to make a motion to approve the retention schedule as written by our executive director?
Sounds good to us. Me. Do we have a second?
Okay.
Second.
Mr.
Second.
Rose, yeah, thank you so much. So it's been moved and seconded to accept the retention schedule. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, let's take a vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the executive director's report, six. Heather's got budget, agency operations, the complaint log, and e-licensing on her agenda there.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. The first item I wanted to address is I did confirm with our IT department that Google File or Google Drive file stream has unlimited storage capacity. So I am scanning in all of our active licensing files and putting them into Google Drive file stream. And so at some point, this is going to take me some time. I'm hoping to have it done before the end of this year, but at some point, the board office will be paperless. Do you have any questions on that?
Will you need temporary help?
No. Nope. I'm on the H's, so I should be okay. The complaint log, there were two new complaints added since I sent out board materials, and the current complaint log is in your red travel folders. And the budget, I do not have a budget update. I believe that I did send that in an email to board members. The Central Services Bureau has had a lot of turnover. They did just recently hire somebody for the position that sends out the summary, the budget summary each month, so I'm hoping to have one for November. And I have no updates for e-licensing.
So do we have on 7 any summary of current events? And our next is call to the public. There is no public to call. 9, does anyone have any items that they'd like to see on future meetings for the agendas? And if I can make a comment there, I know I had come across the article in the latest APMA news, and Heather forwarded everybody that article that is, there's changes that are going to occur with E&M codes beginning January 1 of 2021. And of course, that format now they're using is making it easier for podiatrists to bill for 99214s and 215s, which are codes we've obviously seen as part of complaints here at the board and the way we evaluate those. So any complaint then that we get after January 1, 2021, they'll need to be really watched with the billing and monitor, because then, you know, we're going to obviously see changes in how people are documenting to prove those changes in those codes. So that's
Madam Chair, would you like to put that on for next meeting so that we can have a little discussion?
Yeah, that would be a great idea. Why don't we do that? That way, you know, yeah, then we're all kind of on the same page and know what we're going to be looking at, too, because that'll obviously be important to our investigators as well. Thank you. That's a great idea, Shane. So anybody have anything else? All right. So our next board meeting is on a Tuesday, November the 17th, 2020, and we'll be in Boardroom A. And I know next month we have our informal hearing interview with Dr. Huston. How many other cases will we have, or what's on others that's next month there, Heather?
Currently, I have one other complaint that is on the agenda, and as I stated earlier, I'm hoping to have the report from Dr. Polakoff for the chart audit.
Thank you very much. So, it is now 10:17. Does anyone have any other business or comments they'd like to make before? All righty. Seeing nobody's got anything else they want to say, I will go ahead and make a motion to adjourn the meeting at 10:17 a.m. May I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. So moved. Thank you.